Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
And I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
Our two recipes today have one thing in common. They're both served in lettuce boats. No plating or silverware necessary for these dishes. But first, here's Luann Johnson with a look at this week's news. Supporters and critics are digesting the $4 billion the government awarded the Food and Drug Administration as part of President Obama's 2012 proposed budget. At a time when many programs are experiencing significant funding cuts, the over $1 billion increase to the FDA's funding may reflect the administration's seriousness in addressing the food safety system. The FDA pledges to use the majority of the money for its Transforming Food Safety initiative, saying that funding is needed to increase prevention of foodborne illness through research, food inspections, and scientific analysis of products. Because of the country's giant deficit, not all programs were able to receive increased funding. For instance, the United States Department of Agriculture will have to absorb budget cuts in areas like meat inspection and international food safety inspection. If lawmakers have their way, multiple states across the country will be implementing a plastic and paper bag tax at grocery stores. Stephanie Barger is the executive director of the Earth Resource Foundation. She says that for 30 minutes of use, we end up having to destroy rainforests in Indonesia to get the natural gas and deal with politics of the Middle East to get oil. She adds that then it takes more than 100 years for the bags to break down. And last week, Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign celebrated a full year of its efforts to fight childhood obesity. From its initial launch to its recent campaign with Walmart, Let's Move has brought dialogue about healthy food choices into the spotlight. How would you judge the program's progress thus far? Visit our website to add your thoughts to the conversation, eartheats.org. For more news updates like this, follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. For Earth Eats, I'm Luann Johnson.
We'll be cooking mushrooms later in the program, but first, let's hunt for them. It can be a lucrative business hunting for truffles, as they commonly sell for $1,000 per pound. But finding them is a trick. Their growth is considered a rare natural phenomenon found primarily in France and Italy, and you need to employ the skills of a pig to find them. Well, folks in Oregon are trying to show that truffles can be planted, managed, and harvested just like any other agricultural product. Chef Daniel Orr went on a field trip to Eugene, Oregon, to attend the 6th annual Oregon Truffle Festival. Their truffière, or truffle field, is located near a number of local wineries by the Willamette River. The festivities included a truffle hunt, seminars for training your dog to sniff out truffles, and a grand truffle dinner. One of the founders of the festival is Dr. Charles Lefevre. He's also perhaps the world's foremost culinary truffle cultivator. His job is to work with trees that are known to be good truffle hosts and then plant those in truffières across the country. He's also leading the festival participants and their dogs on a hunt for this reclusive delicacy.
I make my living with the European truffles. And I had French truffles in my refrigerator. But, of course, I live in Oregon. So I had Oregon truffles in my refrigerator right next to the French truffles. And I had always been told that the Oregon truffles were weak. They had no aroma. But the reality is that they're actually very, very good. And the culinary experience is very, very good when they're served well with the right foods. So it struck me as an opportunity to redeem them. So I was looking for that opportunity of a truffle patch where we could actually bring people and have them have the experience of finding truffles. I will do a little demonstration of how to find truffles inside, just inside the woods. Just gather around right here. The way I know that there are truffles in the ground right here is because of the holes that the squirrels and mice have dug. Of course, everywhere that you see a hole and fresh dirt, that truffle is gone. But it tells you that the truffles tend to be clumped, and there are likely to be more, all of its friends. If you find a place that has lots of these little holes, I tend to start back away from them and work toward it. I'm raking down to the mineral soil through all of the organic layer, because the truffles are right at the interface between the organic and mineral layers. And hopefully there actually is a truffle here. There's a truffle.
This is a very small one, but that's an Oregon white truffle. I can just see that this is a spring white truffle. They have these white lines on the surface. But the spring whites have no culinary value at this time of year. So have at it. And yes, please do swap the rakes around. Share the rakes.
Share the rakes.
If you find the little ones, leave them back down. You don't know if it's going to re-pollinate or not, but, you know, go back to little fish. They'll catch and release. With my dog, I'm watching four different
species. It's an odd coincidence that there's a molecule in a ripe truffle that exactly mimics a molecule in a sex pheromone of a pig. So that's one reason why pigs are attracted. But pigs can weigh hundreds of pounds. And if you're walking your pig down the road in Italy, it might be a pretty good indication to people what you're about to do. And, of course, it's a pretty well-guarded secret where you find your truffle. So, you know, hundreds of years ago, it was such a well-kept secret that a man would not even tell his firstborn son the location until his deathbed.
Oh, no, you don't need to eat it.
Well, there's three basic steps to teaching a dog to find anything with its nose. The first thing you want to do is imprint the scent. The dog has to understand that's the smell we're looking for. The second step is to then hide it, you know, like under some loose leaf litter so he visually can't see it, but he needs to locate it with his nose. The third and probably the most difficult step is you have to train a separate alert, which means he needs to let me know in some overt fashion that he's located a truffle. It could be a bark. I use where they actually start scratching the soil in a digging motion, and then I immediately call them off and reward them, and then I go over where they indicated where it was and find it.
And now she's giving me two signs that definitely mean there's truffles around. Stand on the side of a tree, and then where she'll just kind of stand over and say, this is ownership here, but you want it. I'll run off to the next tree. And she'll do that like to three trees. That's really fun.
So for lucky, that sounds we'll, awesome.
For lucky,
makes me want to get a dog.
Basically, what's been discovered recently are there are two different mating types that exist in the truffle, in the black truffle, and you have to have the two of those come together to get truffles to form. And this is new information, absolutely new for scientists. And it has pretty important implications for whether a truffier or a tree is going to be productive or not.
Is there anything kinky about truffle sex?
You know, the whole fungal life cycle is so different from the human life cycle that, okay, here, I'll tell you what it is. If we were like fungi, we would spend all of our lives as a sperm and an egg, and then when we got ready to reproduce, we would fuse to form a human. And then 2 seconds later, we would be back to being sperm and eggs again. That's what fungi do.
I grew up in this landscape, so I look out over these hills and these trees and these oak trees, and I identify with it. I'm made of this place. I'm made of this soil. So it's very interesting for me that I see that these glorious wines and truffles, and it's all coming from this same earth. It's all made of the same stuff that I am. And it's very interesting how seeing delicacies come from the same soil that one is made of can actually affect one's perception of oneself. And it might explain how so many Europeans are so proud of the places that they come from and why they all think that their place is the absolute best place in the world, because they see the other stuff that comes from it.
Charles Lefevre is co-founder of the Oregon Truffle Festival. Shannon Birch is an ecologist studying reproduction of mushrooms. Jim Sanford of Blackberry Farms is the handler for North America's only professional truffle dog. And Dee Dee Dalsred was accompanied on the hunt by her dog, Camille. Thanks to Daniel Orr and all the folks at the Oregon Truffle Festival. We'll be using some truffle oil in our first recipe today. We'll be drizzling that over some broiled king oyster mushrooms.
But what they look like is an oyster mushroom on steroids. You know, I mean, they're giant. They've got this wonderful stem on them. They're meaty. So what I'm going to do with these is just cut them in half. Leave them, I mean, they're so dramatic looking that I'm going to leave them really nice and big and chunky and have a real simple presentation. A little bit of olive oil on top, just enough to lightly coat them. All right, then we got salt and pepper. I'm going to put them on a roasting pan and throw them up under the broiler. And that is it.
That's it?
Yeah, and that will take probably about 3 to 5 minutes under the broiler.
So you're treating these like a main course then?
Yeah, this would be, they're almost like a steak. They're so meaty. You could do, if you can't find the king mushrooms, you could use portobello mushrooms a lot the same way. Even in the time when chanterelles are around, you could do the same recipe with chanterelles. All right, so we pull these out of the broiler. You can see they're nicely browned. That kosher salt's kind of crunchy on top of them. We're going to take a half lemon, just squeeze a little bit of that on top. Okay, a little touch of truffle oil. Okay, and here I've got a nice Napa cabbage leaf. Okay, we're going to put 3 of these mushrooms on top of the Napa cabbage. And one of the nice things about this is I have some spinach arugula pesto. I put that on that Napa leaf. It gives a little bed of sauce underneath there. It plays off the green colors in the Napa. It's a little darker, more kind of gutsy green with that pureed spinach, Parmesan cheese, and arugula with a little bit of garlic, salt, and pepper. And we're going to call that a day. Nice, simple presentation. You know, lovely as an appetizer. You could add a couple other things to make it a main course, maybe some rice, some wild rice, some different mixed grains, and you'd have a wonderful vegetarian dish.
Speaking of wild rice, that's the meat of our next recipe, so to speak.
What do you know about wild rice?
I know that it's tasty and it's brown.
Okay, and is it rice?
I'm going to say no because of that look on your face now.
It's actually a grass. It's a water grass. It did grow in northern Indiana in the dune sections in the marshlands around Lake Michigan, but it's much more well-known up in the lakes of Michigan and Wisconsin. The Native Americans grew it, and they would go by in their canoes and shake the dried seeds off the grasses into their canoes and go home and use that. We can now buy it. It's much easier than going out in a canoe. So you see that it's a long, thin, dark, black to brown seed. Again, it's a good idea always to wash any of your grains. And then what you do is you just put it with some water and boil it until it blooms, okay? So when it blooms, all the seed pods open up and kind of split, and they actually look like kind of like little canoes. And what I do is when I boil my rice, I add a little bit of chopped onions, salt and pepper, a little bit of olive oil, and that's it. And we're just going to do a fun little salad with this. This is the perfect thing to make when you're having some friends come over to have some cocktails. This is the perfect thing to serve in little barquettes of endive. So, you know the Belgian endive, which are the yellow things? You cut off the base, and you can open them up and make little boats out of them. And then stuff them with this wild rice and pear salad with pecans, and you've got a great little past hors d'oeuvre that's healthy and fresh. The nuttiness of the rice really goes well with other nuts. So you could use some pecans, which I'm using. They've been lightly toasted. I'm just going to chop them up so they're about the same size as the rice. Okay, and to that I'm going to add a couple slices of red Anjou pear, which will give it a nice color. This is also going to have a little sweetness to it and a little crunch. Okay, to this you can add whatever kind of herbs you like. Chopped basil, chopped chervil, chopped cilantro, whatever you like you can add to it. You know, at Earth Eats we're pretty loose here, you know. We give you ideas, and you go out there and make them your own, and then you don't even have to give us credit. All right, I'm going to put a little bit of salt and pepper. I'm going to add a little bit of olive oil. Okay, I'm going to add a little bit of lemon zest. And with any salad, you need a little bit of acid. So today I'm going to use some orange juice because I want to play off that sweetness of the pears. Okay, I'm just going to stir that up well. Give her a little taste test. I think it's pretty good. Let's give her a little try. I'll give you a little lettuce leaf. That's our salute to a wonderful native grain that the Native Americans harvested and lived through the winter on. And now we've kind of updated it and made it a really fun food to eat by turning it into a little barquette or boat that's perfect for any cocktail party or even a very light lunch.
Another thing about wild rice is that you can grind it into a flour, put it in a spice grinder and grind it down, and then add it to different breads and baked goods. That's especially useful for folks looking for gluten-free alternatives. Check out photos of both of these dishes and read more about the truffles out in Oregon on our website. Print these recipes while you're there as well, eartheats.org.
Support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli. Information at bloomingfoods.coop.
Production support also comes from goodsforcooks.com, online at goodsforcooks.com.
Earth Eats is a production of WFIU Public Media. Thanks for listening. I'm Chef Daniel Orr.
And I'm Annie Corrigan. See you next time.